Welcome to Limitless, the Bland Beginnings podcast where seeing things differently inspires limitless possibilities. This podcast is being brought to you by Blind Beginnings, an organization based in Vancouver, Canada, that supports children and youth who are blind or partially sighted, along with their families. Limitless was created in order to inform, educate, entertain, and share stories from within the blind and partially sighted community, in order to show the world that the opportunities for those who are blind or partially sighted are truly limitless. And now, it is my pleasure to introduce you to your host, the executive director and founder of Blind Beginnings, Sean Marcellet.
Welcome to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast. I'm your host, Sean Marcellet, and I'm so happy that you've joined us again this week. So this week, we are releasing another of our Exploring Work Wednesdays, which is a program we offer at Blind Beginnings. Once a month, we interview somebody who is blind or partially sighted about their job. And last month, we interviewed Tamara, who works for TransLink, but also talked about her job as a mother. And it was a really interesting conversation that we thought our listeners would enjoy. So without further ado, here is our Exploring Work Wednesday conversation.
And I want to welcome everybody to Exploring Work Wednesday. We're switching things up a little bit tonight. We usually have two guests, but tonight we have one guest talking about two very important jobs. So welcome, Tamara.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Sean contacted me, I feel like, way before Christmas about doing this and said, oh, it's not until February. And now it's very, very suddenly February.
I know. It's amazing how fast time flies. Hey, so why don't you start by telling us a little bit about yourself, level of vision, kind of how and why you're visually impaired, where you grew up, and of course, your jobs.
Sure. So I have been blind for certainly as long as I can remember. I was diagnosed with quite a rare condition called optic nerve glioma when I was about 18 months old. We can probably assume that I was born with it. Gliomas are tumors, and they are right on my optic nerves, kind of wrapped around, and they've never been able to remove them. So they're still just hanging out in there, not really doing any damage. I had quite a long bout of chemotherapy when I was a kid, and that kept everything under control, which is fantastic. And I was able to maintain a little bit of residual vision. So I have tunnel vision in my right eye. They say about 8%. I don't know. I don't know what that means. But it's enough. It's enough to function for me in a familiar place. So I definitely have light perception. I'm able to read very small bits of text. Like, I'm able to play cards if I hold large print cards up really close to my right eye. Nothing really functional in my left eye. I do use a guide dog and a cane as well sometimes if I happen to go out somewhere without my dog. So that's been my mobility since I was quite young. I started using a cane when I was about 10, and then got my first guide dog when I was 15. I grew up on the island in Qualicum Beach, so a very small town for those of you who don't know. It's a lot of golf courses and retirees, but it's very lovely. Finished high school there, and I'm really happy to have grown up in such a small place. But that being said, I always knew that I would make a move to the big city. It was something that I always knew that I wanted, because I always knew that I wanted not necessarily a big successful career, but I wanted employment choices and opportunities, and I wanted access to transit. I really wanted to be able to go places independently, and that's something that's very slowly improving on the island, but it's not going anywhere fast.
I lived in Qualicum for Sean about knows. A year and after university. But yes, I remember the bus being once every 2 hours, I believe.
Something like that.
Yeah. So I totally understand the lack of transit and wanting to be in the big city. So when did you start thinking about a career, and what factors contributed to the career you ended up pursuing?
I mean, I think sort of as I entered high school, I probably, high school on the island for me was grade nine. I certainly thought about employment before then, but I think as most kids do, you know, you kind of go from wanting to be a paleontologist to an astronaut to a nurse, whatever. But I think I probably seriously and realistically started kind of assessing my skills and my interests maybe grade eight, grade nine. And then kind of just starting to ask questions and do research to figure out what sort of education or what sort of volunteering or additional skills I would need to develop to get into that sort of career that I wanted. Now, the interesting thing is that I did not necessarily end up with the type of job that I had planned on. And I can talk about that a little more later. It has components in it, and it has sort of the flavor of what I wanted, because my job does involve a lot of communicating with people and public outreach sometimes. But I initially, and for a long time, thought that I wanted to be a journalist. So I started out university taking a lot of journalism courses. And actually thinking back, I think my high school graduation little intro speech as I was walking across the stage, at that point I wanted to get into psychology. So I kind of started off university taking a mix of psychology and journalism courses. And I started that on the island. And then I made the move to Vancouver in 2006. So a few years after I graduated, I was about 20 when I moved over here. And then I took a little bit of time off because I realized that maybe psychology, especially a psychology degree, wasn't going to get me into the kind of job that I would be really interested in. So I came over here and decided to take some time off of school and started looking for a job. And it was really, really tricky.
So what happened? Maybe just
sure. Yeah.
Get us to where you are now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I, and like I said, this was at this point, you know, 15 years ago. But I was a very proficient technology user. I used JAWS. And so I applied for a lot of jobs, and I got quite a few interviews. I know Sean's going to ask me this question later on, but back then, I often didn't disclose on my resume and on my cover letter that I have vision loss. And I was very strategic about it. There were some jobs I knew that I could, and I would still get a call if they knew. But there were other jobs I wasn't so confident that they would call me, even if on paper it looked like I was qualified. If they knew I was blind, they were just gonna toss my papers in the bin. So I went to quite a few interviews and didn't get a lot of calls. And then I would say within about a year, realized what I wanted to do for school. And I enrolled at BCIT in the marketing and communications program there. So that sort of led me to a few volunteer opportunities. And that was my way of getting my foot in the door at a lot of places, but also just really getting familiar with the city and having to take transit to get to different things was through volunteering. So I really proactively started to, like, I would just go online to volunteer databases and look for postings or look up places I would be interested in working at or volunteering at and contacting people. I just, same as applying for jobs, just started putting resumes and emails out there. And it was through some volunteering I was doing at CNIB that I actually got my first real job, I like to say. It definitely wasn't my first paid job, but it was my first real job. And I was hired on as a communications coordinator there. That was 4 years after I moved to Vancouver, though. So there was definitely a lot of little odd jobs and then starting school at BCIT in between then and when I got my first job. I was at CNIB for 5 years. did a couple of different things there, communications for a few years. And then, gosh, I may even know some of you from the last couple of years I spent at CNIB as the service coordinator there. I did a lot of intake and opening of files and setting up services and that sort of thing. And then I really decided that I needed a change, which, funny enough, my job at TransLink is absolutely a change, but it's very similar in a lot of ways too. I still get to stay connected to a lot of the people and a lot of the community groups that I was connected to at CNIB. I needed a change, and I mean, quite frankly, I also wanted to make more money. I wanted a better job, and there were no promotion opportunities at CNIB, so it was time for me to move on, as people do when they're advancing their careers. It was kind of a fluke, actually. I had been looking for a new job for about 6 months. While I was still working at CNIB, I certainly didn't put in my notice or anything like that, but I was looking around, signed up for a lot of these sort of online services. I think I had signed up for job alerts through Indeed.com and a couple of other things. And the TransLink opening, my access transit coordinator job that I'm doing now, showed up in my inbox. I wasn't even aware, to be honest, that sort of position existed at TransLink. I did know someone, again, through my work at CNIB. I did know one of the specialists in that department at TransLink, but it was a department of a few people, and I had no idea that it really existed to the degree that it did. So I read the posting and thought, wow, that would be great. And I applied, went through quite a rigorous interview and testing process, and got the job in 2015. So it's been, gosh, almost 6 years now.
So funny, because I worked at CNIB as well, and that was my first real job. Again, like, I had smaller, you know, summer jobs and different sort of part-time things, lots of little things. But yeah, that was the first like grown-up job with benefits and full-time, all that. And paycheck I was there for 5 years. So
yeah, there you go.
It's just so funny.
It was just when I started to get antsy for a change, mm-hmm. I guess. Yeah.
So what do you do as the TransLink access coordinator?
So my job has actually shifted a little bit in what I do in the time that I've been at TransLink. And I'm confident that will probably happen again in the future if I stick around for a long time. And that's okay. That's great. When I first started, the main bulk of my job was community outreach. So my day-to-day was basically going around to different disability agencies, seniors groups, and I was also in charge of community outreach for newcomers to Canada. So I did a lot of ESL classes, and I would go and do presentations basically on teaching them how to use transit, whether it be accessibility features of transit. That was also shortly before we launched Compass on the system. So then suddenly I was doing workshop after workshop on the Compass card and how to use the card and load the card and the benefits of Compass and all that kind of stuff. And I loved it. I was a little bit nervous at first, especially the ESL portion, and presenting to the English as a second language classes, because I was doing all different levels. ESL classes are split into different levels, of course, as they would be if you were learning any language. And so quite a bit of that learning often is visual. And so I was a little bit nervous of how can I communicate all of this detailed information that I need to these folks who are so keen to learn it, and know that they're understanding without being able to see head nods or eye contact or confusion. But I loved it. It went really, really well. And it was, they were actually that sort of, I guess, portion of my portfolio was my favorite. I really, really had a great time doing the ESL classes. And those were the groups that got me traveling all over Metro Vancouver. So I started at TransLink, and within a couple of weeks of kind of learning the ropes of my job, I was sort of creating my own schedule as requests for presentations came in, and I would be having to go to, say, an ESL school in North Van for the first 2 days of the week, and then I would be going to some sort of other group in Maple Ridge the next day, and then I might be back at another ESL school in Coquitlam the day after that. So I got to know sort of the transit system, and just really brush up on my O&M skills, to be honest, really quickly. And when I had first accepted the job, I remember my manager said to me, you know, like, if you ever get stuck, you can absolutely feel free to call a taxi and expense it. And I said, okay, great. Like, I really appreciate it, and I certainly won't hesitate to. And then, I don't know, I kind of got this stubborn streak in me pretty immediately where I was like, no, I am never going to call a taxi. I took this job to show people that the transit system is accessible, and I'm going to take that system everywhere. And I did. I never called a taxi in all of my outreach. In some cases, I gave myself a lot of time. There were some pretty, I don't want to say treacherous, but I kind of do. I remember once going out to a school in Richmond, and there was like some construction on this little side road. And thank God a student from the day before actually saw me, because I was just kind of hanging out on the side of the road waiting for a passerby for me to flag down. And he recognized me and came and led me in the right direction. But it was sort of very hard and fast exposure to everything I was teaching. So I really could put my money where my mouth was, at least when I was giving workshops and saying, hey, like, I know it can be tricky, but there really are a lot of tools along the way. So it felt good. It felt like I was 100% telling the truth of what I was teaching people.
That's awesome.
So, and sorry, I should say, so now I don't do any of that outreach stuff anymore. And my job has really transitioned to sort of a blend of, I administrate two of the customer advisory committees that we have. We have an Access Transit Users Advisory Committee, and we just launched a Handy Dart Advisory Committee last year as well. So I sort of run both of those committees and support those committees from the TransLink side. They meet every couple of months, each of them, and there's a lot that goes into sort of planning those meetings and taking minutes and distributing materials and all that kind of stuff. I do quite a bit of sort of customer email communications, complaints that come in, or questions, tricky questions that come in, often get sent my way. So what I love about the job that I do now is that I really get to work with a lot of different people across TransLink. TransLink is not just, you know, an office of us that kind of work on planning and marketing. We, of course, have the company who runs SkyTrain. We have the company who runs the buses. They're kind of subsidiaries and branches under the big TransLink umbrella. And I get to work with all of them because the Access Transit Department is kind of responsible for accessibility across the entire system. So it's really fun to be able to work with so many different people. It means I'm in a lot of meetings, but it's still nice to be able to do that. Our team just consults on the accessibility of a lot of different things, of course, stations and bus stops and vehicles and that sort of thing. But also this week, actually, every day I've had big, long meetings on public art that's going to be installed at some new SkyTrain stations. So really accessibility of every aspect of the transit system.
Yeah, that's interesting because you think accessibility, you think disability, but, you know, obviously people who are new to our country or who don't speak English, like there's a lot of other aspects of accessibility.
Yeah.
Are you using your marketing and communications degree?
I would say so. You know, certainly I do a lot of writing, even board reports and that kind of thing. And I really wouldn't have the skills that I do to do those kinds of corporate communications if I hadn't gone to school for communications. And I would say even the marketing stuff has been applicable in a lot of different ways. Yeah. Like I said, I haven't ended up where I planned to and where I thought I would, but it feels right and it really makes sense now that I'm in it where I am.
We hear that a lot here. Yeah. When talking to people that they didn't necessarily.
I had no idea I'd be here, but here I am. Yeah.
What skills helped you get through your schooling?
I think organization. I've always been a very organized person and kind of a disciplined person. It's embarrassing to now think back about it, and especially now that I'll be raising kids in school of my own. But I was like always the kid. My parents didn't need to tell me to do my homework. I'd just be in my room after school doing mm-hmm. it, and just, I don't know, that kind of nerdy, responsible, boring kid.
Me too.
Yeah. I don't know where that got me, but that was how it was. And that sort of just natural studiousness, I guess, certainly helped. I've always been a really outgoing, friendly person, and I think that really helped me too in school. I took part-time courses at BCIT, so it's different than sort of being in a cohort where you're in the same classes with the same people from semester to semester. You kind of go to your job or volunteer, whatever you're doing during the day, and then they were all part-time night classes. So I was with different people in different classes constantly. I found it really easy to connect with people and make friends. And in marketing and communications, there are a lot of group projects and that kind of thing. So those kind of networking and relationship building skills definitely came in handy. Mm-hmm. And I think just sort of the communications and self-advocacy skills that we as people with blindness and low vision have to develop throughout our lives and early in our lives. Those skills, by the time I got to college and university, I mean, that was just built in mm-hmm. to everything I did, and those were certainly helpful for sure.
What accommodations do you need at your job, and I mean, were they open to providing those for you?
So I don't really need a whole lot. Like I said, I use JAWS and I do a lot of computer work. So other than JAWS, there really wasn't anything. I would love to have a Braille display, but I've never really had any real reason to request one. I don't need one that badly. So I've never bothered to request it. I'm pretty confident that if I made a case for it, they'd supply me with one, and that wouldn't be an issue.
Did they provide JAWS? Like, did they have JAWS already, or was that something?
No. So that was something. So by the time I applied for the job at TransLink, like I said, that was in 2015. I had already been working at CNIB for 5 years. I was very confident in disclosing my blindness on my application, and in some cases, you know, I just kind of used my gut or knowledge about the company that I had, but in some cases I thought and knew that it would be a benefit for me mm-hmm. to disclose. You know, sometimes it gives you a little bit of a leg up. Mm-hmm. I had applied for a job before TransLink with the BC Liquor Board, which is a government agency. And again, I knew that disclosing my blindness on my application would kind of maybe be a plus or make me unique. I didn't get the job, but I did get an interview. And yeah, I think so. At TransLink, I had disclosed my disability. I don't remember if we had the conversation about specific accommodations during the interview, but it was kind of a three-stage interview process. Like I said, it was a very in-depth interview. So at some point, it may have not even been until they offered me the job, which was nice because then there was no pressure. They already wanted to hire me. I knew it. And then I was very free and comfortable to say, okay, great. Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. And this is what I need. Mm. And so that was great. And I mean, they were just really lovely when I started. Like I said, I have a guide dog, and one of the guys in sort of the office maintenance admin department, he was just so excited to go out and get a mat for my dog to lie on. And he bought me this special jug for me to, he saw me struggling with a bowl of water for my dog one day, trying to walk up the hall and not slosh the water everywhere. So he went out and bought me this fancy jug. He said, I think you would just have such an easier time if you had this jet. Yeah, it was so cute. It was so cute. Yeah. So they were just really, really lovely and helpful. But Jaws was kind of the only big ticket item that, and it's, I mean, it's not even a big ticket item for a large mm-hmm. corporation. You should never, ever feel like that.
What about the having to travel around so much? Were they like, I mean, would the expectation be that even if they had hired somebody who drove, that they would take transit to get?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, there are shared vehicles available, just because sometimes, depending on where some of the outreach staff have to go, they could just pack a lot more into a day if they can drive. You know, sometimes taking transit from New West, where the TransLink office is, out to Richmond just takes a really long time. Mm-hmm. So there are vehicles available. But I can imagine that if someone was booking a vehicle for every time they needed to go out and do some outreach, they'd probably get in trouble eventually. That's not the main priority.
If you could give advice to your younger self about your career, what would it be?
I think just the reassurance, and sort of a heads up that you're probably not going to end up where you think you will. Mm. I wouldn't have listened to my older self, I don't think. So it's kind of silly to think, but I think there would have been a little bit of comfort in just knowing that it's okay to for things to not go according to plan, and to end up in, you know, a different job or what if I had decided a couple of years after high school that, geez, I've spent my whole life just knowing that I'd move to the big city, but actually, no, that's not going to work. Or no, I don't want to do that. What if I had stayed in Qualicum mm-hmm. Beach? That would have been okay. You're allowed to change your mind. Right. And so, yeah, I think I would just tell my younger self to have an open of a mind as possible, and just sort of really be accepting of changes to the plan, and be ready to kind of make those little twists and turns and see what happens.
What did your parents do that really helped you be successful?
They really allowed me to be independent, and I'm a combo of allowed me and pushed me into being independent. As a young kid, if I was wondering if the video store had a particular video, oh gosh, I'm really dating myself. So you guys, we used to have these stores, and you would go into them and look at rows of VHS tape. Anyways, oh my gosh, that's
and Qualicum had like three videos.
Yeah, Sean knows well. Yeah, they. Oh god, I can't even believe that's the example I just used.
That's
brutal.
Great.
If I wanted to order a pizza, let's go with that. That's completely.
I liked the video store reference.
I liked it too. It feels really good. It's very retro. Anyways, or if I was looking for something, and I'm talking if I was 10 or 11 years old, my mom would have said, okay, great. I'll look up the phone number or call 411. Is that still a thing? I don't know. Oh, geez. There was no internet. There wasn't even dial up yet. Anyways, they would encourage me to use the phone and phone to ask something if we were physically in a store. And I was had a question or was wondering about something, they would take me up to the cash register and get me to ask myself, just even as a really, really young kid. And then, of course, as I got older, if I was interested in, I don't know, taking a piano lesson or volunteering somewhere or getting my first summer job, again, they would tell me to phone myself and ask mm-hmm. questions. And so just a really big push for my own independence and help if I needed it. Absolutely help available if I asked and if I needed support, but they would always encourage me to try myself first.
That's so awesome, because yeah. I didn't get pushed to do that. And I remember being a teenager and just hating making those phone calls or asking in a store. So yeah, such a good skill to practice. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now we're going to switch gears and talk about parenting, which I have to admit, I'm pretty excited about having this conversation. It's not very often I get to talk to another blind mom. So when did you know that you wanted to be a parent, or when did you know that you could be a parent?
Yeah. Really early on. So I have two sisters who are quite a bit younger than me. They're 10 and 12 years younger than I am. So I would say, I mean, probably even earlier than that, I thought I'd want to be a parent. But definitely by the time I was a preteen and a young teenager and had babies in my house that I was growing up. And I'm not a big baby fan. Like I'm not one of those people who wants to hold your baby. I'm not baby crazy. I'm dog crazy, but I'm definitely not baby crazy. So it wasn't that, it was more that I just loved watching my sisters grow up. And I loved when they got to about 3 and 4 years old, and it's just tons of fun. I knew for sure. And because I grew up with those girls, there was never really a question in my mind if I could do it, because I was blind. I was responsible for babysitting a lot, changing diapers, feeding, cleaning up, all that kind of stuff. It was never even a question in my mind if I could do it. I just had to do it.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. Because for me, I definitely remember being 18 and learning of a blind person that was a mom, like meeting this person
for the
who was
first
blind.
Time.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And up until that point, I wasn't sure. I was like, can I? Like, I don't know. Are blind people parents? Like, how, you know, I've never seen one. So is this a thing?
Is this real?
And yeah, I mean, I did babysit as a teenager, but you know, my aunt let me babysit my cousin, and I don't know, I felt like, well, they're just letting me, like it was friends of the family who were testing me out or giving me a chance. And of course nothing terrible happened, you know, the children survived my babysitting, but yeah, I wasn't sure. So that's so cool. When you were helping with your sisters though, like, did you just sort of figure out stuff, or did you have to learn, you know, changing a diaper differently, or I don't know.
I don't know either. And I was there. I guess so. But I mean, it's the same as learning anything. We learn a lot of things differently. But we don't really realize in the moment that we're learning them differently than we would be if we could see what we were doing. I won't bore you with the details of diapers too much, but truly, there's no good, easy, non-messy way to change a diaper. It's gross and challenging whether you can see or not. So, you know, stuff like that. Same with feeding, honestly. When a baby or a toddler is first learning to eat, there is just stuff everywhere. Matter if you can see, because you're not going to keep constantly cleaning it up as they're eating. You cannot keep up with the mess. So
I actually think the feeding is harder than the diaper changing.
Yes, I would agree. We did spaghetti for the first time ever. I think it was my daughter's first time having spaghetti last night, and she ate it naked in her diaper, but still went straight to the bath after dinner. It was a nightmare. Yeah,
I've heard some people say they just feed their little ones in the bathtub.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. That's really, yeah, that's interesting. That's kind of cool that you just always knew you could. And that totally makes sense. Because when you are learning anything, like if your mom was teaching you how to, I don't know, make a bed,
yeah,
she would have done it in a way that made sense to you, just like teaching you how to change a diaper, right? Like,
yeah.
So I certainly had some things that I used or did to make my life a little easier when my son was really little, which I guess I could call accommodations. Are there things that you use that have helped you?
Definitely. And funny, some of them are sort of accommodation-like, and some of them, a lot of the things and ideas I got from sighted parents. So I said, everybody needs all the help and support they can get when it comes to raising a baby and a toddler and young kids. So there are very sort of accessible, specific devices that you can get. And I actually have read about some of them and don't even have some of them yet. So you can get, of course, like talking body temperature thermometers and that kind of stuff. I didn't have a thermometer my whole life. And then when you have a baby, you suddenly realize how many temperatures you have to take. You're constantly taking a baby's temperature, just FYI. So there are things like that. And then there are, a lot of them are very medicine related. There are like medicine spoons and syringes and that kind of stuff that have tactile markings or clicks when you turn them a certain way to make sure that you're dispensing the right amount of Tylenol or whatever you need to be giving your baby. So there are definitely little things like that that can be handy. I don't have either of those things, by the way.
I don't either
get them. They sound great. I just need to place an Amazon order. We have lots of things around our house that I stole ideas from other friends who are not blind, and they have saved my life. I call it the baby jail. We have a very large pen. It's a very nice pen. It's lovely. Set up in our kitchen area. We kind of have a big open eat-in area in our kitchen that I cleared out and put down some foam mat on the floor, completely enclosed it, put some animal and alphabet stickers up on the wall. It's like I said, it's a very lovely jail. put some baskets of toys in there. And to be honest, my daughter doesn't spend that much time in there. But if I'm doing something where I absolutely cannot have her wandering around, if I'm opening the oven and I'm going to be in and out of the oven for a few minutes, or if sometimes if I'm vacuuming quickly, she's gotten to the age, she's almost two and she loves to help. And sometimes I just don't want her help. I just want to do it really quickly. So sometimes I lock her in jail for 5 minutes while I'm vacuuming the kitchen floor. I honestly, we we constructed this enclosure when she was really little. I would say about 4 months we put it up, and it was actually even more so that she could have a place to be on the floor and play and be safe if the dogs were running around. I have my guide dog, and then we also have a small pet dog, and I just wanted there to be a place that I knew she was safe, that she had some things to do and occupy her, but that there was separation between her and the dogs if I couldn't be right beside her. So that was kind of the initial purpose of it. What else do we have around?
The dogs don't jump into jail.
They do not. They do not. That's no, good. They have not they shown much interest. Yeah, they know. They know better for sure. There are a lot of other little handy things. I'm just trying to think because, of course, they seem so normal to me now that I'm so deep into parenting. But, I mean, yeah, you can get, of course, she wears a lot of protective gear when she's eating. A lot of protective gear.
A smock bib.
Yeah, I was going to say there's these big, like, waterproof bibs with sleeves that kind of completely cover them, and actually ours has pockets on the bottom so that mm-hmm. if something falls down the front of her, hopefully it ends up in the pockets. We have bibs with big pockets across the front of them, so it's basically just trying to contain messes as much as possible constantly. Now that my daughter's name is Marley, and now that Marley's kind of a lot more mobile and busy. She's a very busy girl. She loves coloring and kind of is getting into those messier activities. And you can get these mats that you just basically fill a pen with water, and they can draw on this mat with a water pen and make shapes and color things in, and it's just water. So there are things like that that I will give her to do if she wants to do an activity that I don't even need to think about. Like, the worst that's going to happen is that some water is going to drip onto the carpet. And it's not a big deal. And then we, you know, reserve markers and crayons and that kind of stuff for when I can be right beside her or when she's in her high chair. So just kind of, yeah, plan accordingly and give her appropriate activities for what's going on.
What part of parenting have you found challenging, and is it related to vision?
It is definitely not related to vision. it's really busy. There's a lot to do constantly. And you know, if you're someone who values a good night's sleep or just a lot of alone time, you get to a certain point where you just don't get that for quite a long time. And it's hard. It's an adjustment. I would say also, if you're a person who really thrives on a routine and a schedule, and gets stressed out if things get thrown off, you need to learn to get over that really quickly, or life will be really hard. I used to be like that. I don't love the unexpected. And I love routine, and I love being able to count on things going a certain way, the same way all the time. And I had to learn really quickly to let go of that, because you can kind of make things way more difficult for yourself. And you do it to yourself. You know, a baby or a kid isn't going to change their behavior because it's stressing you out. They do not care. You kind of have to just learn to go with the flow a little bit more, and it's been a very valuable lesson. It feels good to be able to just go with the flow. But I would say, yeah, some of that stuff has been the hardest about parenting, and I don't think it's vision related at all. No,
I would totally agree. And I think that was the hardest part for me, and I don't think I did get over it quick enough, because that
there's
first
still
year,
time. There's still time.
Well, it's better now as they get older.
Yeah,
they're my son's pretty happy with routine as well, which kind of helps. He likes to know what the plan is, and you know, he's happy to follow the plan. But yeah, when I would like try so hard and plan so well, I thought, around nap times and feeding times, and then there would be like an exploding diaper.
Yeah.
Right. Unexpectedly, just as we were supposed to go catch the bus, right? Like, just, ah. Yeah. Yeah. are there aspects of parenting that you feel you excel at, maybe because of your blindness?
I have thought about this so much, and I meant to ask my husband before we started. I was going to say, like, hey, can you think of anything that I'm really awesome at that you totally suck at and that it's because I can't see? I didn't ask him, and I have a feeling he wouldn't have anything very constructive to say. But I can't think of anything. Can you think of anything? Do you have any ideas?
It's funny. I didn't even think about the question.
You're just throwing the question at me. Yeah, you're not.
I took these questions as they are usually related to jobs and just sort of like made them related to parenting. But I do. Well, I mean, I'm also a counselor, so it might be. But I do feel like I really can have always been able to pick up on my son's emotions and, you know, like just the intonation of his voice, how he's feeling, which I think I'm good at because I'm blind partly as well. Yeah. I seem to always know where everything is, which always blows my mind. Like there's my husband and my son are both fully sighted, but they can't find something, usually something of my son's, and I can find it because I'm systematic and because I think, I use my head to logically think where that might be rather than just glancing around. So it just always surprises everyone in our house that I'm the one that can find the thing.
That's your superpower. That's nice. That's a really good point though. I am a really organized person. And I hate things kind of out of order. You know, when you have a kid, they come with so much stuff. Even if you're kind of, and we are pretty minimalist people, and I have no problem with packing up extra toys and hiding them away in a closet or donating them and kind of keeping a solid rotation of things coming in and things going out. But, you know, I want there to be things everywhere to keep my daughter occupied. Basically, I always want there to be an option other than tugging at my pant leg. So we have a lot of stuff contained in baskets. I have baskets and storage bins and storage ottomans filled with plastic animals and books and trains and just things everywhere. And I think I've really always been like that. And it's probably a little bit because of my blindness. Everything needs to have a home and a place so that when I'm looking for it, I can go to that place and check for it instead of doing the run around, feel around, brushing every surface.
Yes.
It's helpful. And I think, yeah, that's probably a skill I've developed because of vision loss and something that's been really helpful.
Good luck when she gets into Lego. I know
the little stuff. Yeah, we're still in the stage of toys are pretty big, but they are quickly getting smaller and smaller. Yes. Which stresses me out. Yeah. Yeah.
It's the you need to clean your stuff up because I'm vacuuming.
Yeah.
I already asked you that. How have people responded to you when you're out in the world with your daughter?
So I was really worried is really the best way to put it about this because I also have a guide dog. So I've gone through years of my life being that person on transit, out in public, just bombarded with questions and comments and lovely, friendly things, but just too much because I have a dog. And I thought, oh man, I'm going to have a baby and then I'm going to be the girl with the baby and the dog. Like, could I get an invisibility cloak somewhere? I don't even want to be seen. And I thought things would just multiply and intensify like crazy. You know what? It really hasn't been that bad. I think I'm not baby crazy, but the majority of people are pretty baby crazy. And so it's almost given them a distraction. I think a lot of times people, especially on transit, my guide dog does a pretty good job of tucking himself right under the seat. So oftentimes people don't even notice my dog. And quite often, just initially in conversation, I don't look blind. And so I think sometimes if it's just a quick passing by or a quick conversation, people might not even know. I just until recently was still carrying my daughter, so wearing her on my back on the bus and taking her to daycare and that kind of thing. It's just so much easier and faster than having those little feet move along the sidewalk by themselves. But I'm 7 months pregnant, so I'm not doing that anymore. It's just too much for me to carry. But yeah, I think the dog plus the baby has kind of acted as a bit of a distraction for people. So they just kind of engage in normal conversation or even just interact with my daughter and don't even talk to me, which has been kind of nice. Yeah. Yeah. I can just sit back and relax and they can make faces at each other or whatever. And that's been great. Yeah.
Have you done any like mom and baby group type things?
I never did. I never did when I was on maternity leave. And it's been an interesting time because I was on maternity leave. I took about a year off from work. And then Marley went to daycare and I went back to work for about a month, maybe less. And then COVID hit.
Right.
And the world just changed very suddenly. So Marley's at the age now where there would be age appropriate things like group music classes and swimming lessons and that kind of thing that I would love for her to be in, and that I would absolutely take her to. But until that stuff is back up and running again, we're just hanging out at home like everybody else. No, I never did mom and baby groups when I was off on leave and when Marley was a newborn or a young baby. I never really felt a need to, and this is kind of unfortunate in a way, because I didn't make any mom friends or baby friends close by in our neighborhood. That being said, I have now because a lady across the street has a couple of kids who are about the age of my daughter and then an older one. But my sister, who lives on the island still, my niece is 8 months older than Marley. So her and I kind of went through this together, funny, virtually and over the phone before that started to be the way we communicated always. We kind of went through it together. I listened to, and still do, listen to a lot of parenting podcasts, and belong to some really great Facebook parenting groups. And that just felt like enough for me.
Well, I can tell you, I did go to some mom and baby groups and I didn't make any mom friends there. So
didn't you? Yeah. Well, and it's very doable to get out of the house and to go and do different things. And you certainly don't have to lock yourself up in your house, but it's tricky. There's a lot involved with getting especially an under 6 month old out of the house. Things start to feel a bit different once a baby passes that 6 month mark. But before that, oh baby.
Yeah. It was stressful. I pushed myself and it was not always, I don't know, worth it, I guess.
Yeah.
It's funny. He did do a little music class when he was two. So we did that together. And I remember, you know, he would run in the circle. The parents would be all in the circle. And there were some times where we would walk around the circle with our kids, but there'd be other times when the kids would just do something. And I was like, oh, am I going to find my kid again? Or
that's a really good point.
Come back to me.
I have not thought of that. Yeah. It's not like a dog. You can't just count on calling them and they'll come running. It's not like that.
No. And we went to the library and the same thing. He just kept running away from me and going over to the librarian to look closer at the pictures. And sometimes I would grab the wrong kid. It was quite amusing.
Yeah. Yeah, you just have to be prepared for that. And I mean, and this, again, it's just, it goes with being a parent. There's just a certain level of humility that you need to accept and be okay with, because whether you can see your kid and keep 100% tabs on your kid or not, every kid gets themselves into trouble or throws a tantrum or doesn't listen at some point, at many points in public, whether their parents are blind or not. So it's just, you just have to learn to be okay with it and laugh about it.
Mm-hmm. So how are you juggling the whole working mom thing? That's pretty, it's a lot.
Ooh, it's a lot. Coffee, lots yeah. and lots of coffee. It's a lot, but that whole routine thing and organization thing really helps. And it's something I remember when I first went back to work, after being on mat leave, I was overwhelmed. I thought, oh, just even the smallest things, because it was all new. You know, when anything is new, when any little event is new or any little thing you have to do is new, it's just like, oh, I don't even know where to begin. And I remember even thinking about packing a lunch for Marley to take to daycare. I was just like, oh my God, like I don't even know what I'm going to fill all these little containers with to put in her lunch bag and make sure she has enough food to eat during the, which was ridiculous because I had been feeding her and keeping her alive for a year at that point. But for some reason, packaging that up and sending that for somebody else to just completely threw me. I was just like, I don't even know what I'm doing anymore. But, you know, I settled into a routine getting back to work really quickly, and suddenly it was like, I mean, within a week or two, it was no big deal at all. But it is just that initial jolt of a routine completely changing. That's hard. It is hard, no matter whether it involves kids or work or anything. It's really tricky. So now I don't know. Now everything feels pretty second nature. And I mean, of course, too, when COVID hit, things changed again just shortly after I had went back to work. I was suddenly working from home. Marley was not in daycare. Oh my goodness. So my husband and I were trying to balance our days to get in full-time hours at our jobs, but also keep our kid alive and occupied all day long. That was a really challenging couple of months until she went back to daycare. I feel like in June, maybe. Last year, it might have been July, I don't know. And so, you know, now at this point, Marley's back in daycare. I'm working from home still, which I really, really enjoy. And it's just, and I should say, I have a really, really fantastic husband. He's super dad. And, you know, I would say if and when you decide to have kids and you are going to have kids with a partner, just really do your best to make sure that you pick a partner who's all in and wants to do the kid thing and is as excited about it as you are. Can really make a difference to have I don't know, that partnership and that 50-50. I don't know what I'd do without it. So I don't know. We, like I said, we manage and nothing's perfect. I think for me, there's just never any expectation that things are totally perfect, especially because I spend so much time kind of connecting with other parents online and reading. You know, there's so much to read on the internet, and you read a lot of things about like the routines you should have for getting your kid ready for bed. And a lot of parents say, oh, yeah, we have dinner and then we have a bath and then we do this and that, and like that doesn't have to be your routine and it doesn't have to look like that every day. We don't do a bath every night because Marley's not filthy dirty rolling in the mud every day. She mm-hmm. has a bath two or three times a week, and like that's totally fine and acceptable. Mm-hmm. So I think just managing expectations and figuring out what your priorities are and how many of those priorities fit into the 24 hours you have in a day.
I am just curious. I'm throwing you a question that I didn't warn you about, but you're about to have another baby.
Yeah.
Like, how are you feeling about two babies?
I don't know, Sean. I don't know. I'm really excited. I'm so excited. And actually, so I'm due right at the beginning of April, and that feels really soon at this point. I'm really excited, and you know, it's going to be a lot this is going to be one chaotic house for probably the next 3 years, I'm going to say. But that being said, it feels so different this time around. I don't think this really had much to do with blindness, but there's so much nervousness and unknown the first time around. And even for me, you know, like I said, I had been through having two baby sisters, and my sister had just had a baby before I did. So I kind of had a lot of exposure, I guess mm-hmm. you could say. And I was still freaking out. I remember when we had our daughter being at the hospital, and I was like, oh, I don't even know if I remember how to bath a baby. Like, how do you make sure their head doesn't go under the water? And just like crazy yeah. little details of things. And then I remember when we got home and we started to go out with her really quick. I think she was out at a restaurant for the first time when she was like 5 days old. and so there's no, yeah, I can have a picture of her with a beer beside her. it's never too soon.
That's great.
But no, in all seriousness, you know, even just getting out of the house, the routine and what you needed to remember to get out of the house the first time around was so hard. It felt like performing brain surgery just to remember the things you needed to make sure you took with you mm-hmm. When you were taking a small human out of the house. And this time around, I could do it half asleep, and I will be doing it half asleep. I feel like I'll just be a zombie for quite a while. But yeah, I know what I'm doing now. And that feels really good. And I know what's challenging now, I think, which there's some comfort in just knowing where the trickiest parts are. And yeah, I don't know. I feel excited and ready and terrified all at the same time.
Well, good luck.
Thanks.
I kind of knew one was all I could do. And yeah.
So very wise.
I have a lot of respect for you. Yeah. do you have any advice for those who are listening who are blind and someday want to be parents?
I mean, this is such a brutal answer. It's so terrible, but I really do mean find a partner who's really
on board
and who's just great at doing life with, you know. There's a lot involved, at especially if you're managing a job and a kid and a household and also just the adventures of life. And you know, it's really good to take the time to find somebody who that all goes relatively smoothly with. Not perfectly, but relatively smoothly is great. Ask lots of questions, you know, like I said, the more I've kind of discovered along this journey and connected with other parents, the more I've realized that like 99% of my fears around having a baby and being a parent have nothing to do with being blind. They are so universal, the worries and stresses of being a parent, and also the wonders and exciting things too. They're very universal. And if, you know, there are ever any times work or school or just hobbies or walking around your neighborhood, if there are any times that make you feel kind of excluded in your community or just like there's a little bit of space between you and people, definitely finding that common ground of being a parent, whether you're blind or sighted, really brings you close to people. It's mm-hmm. yeah, it's strange, but it is kind of a weird bond that people have all of a sudden when they have kids.
Yeah, it's true. Really true. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Tamara. This has been very informative and fun for me to connect with somebody who I absolutely can relate to. So thank you.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed listening to that conversation as much as I enjoyed speaking with Tamara.
You've been listening to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast. If you have a question, a comment, or a future topic for an episode, please send us an email to limitless@blindbeginnings.ca. And please join us again next time.
This podcast has been brought to you by Blind Beginnings, an organization based in Vancouver, Canada, that supports children and youth who are blind or partially sighted, along with their families. Music for this podcast is composed by Sean Bishop and Clement Chow. Production and audio editing by Rob Minot. For more information about Blind Beginnings and the work it does to support children and youth who are blind and partially sighted, along with their families, visit us on the web at www.blindbeginnings.ca. And also remember to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We thank you for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you next time.